extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Now, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partner in soccer, Matt Doyle. Two-man show, give and go today on this Monday, March 4th. Coming up, Inter Miami lead the show. And before you start groaning, they drop the nickel on Orlando City. So we got to do it. Two goals for Suarez, two goals for Messi. Miami off and running. Now, the weather in Miami, slightly different than that in Utah. Snowmageddon. Hugo Lloris is experiencing something that he may have never experienced before, and that is a hat made out of snowflakes. LAFC lost, RSL won. We'll explain why Cherundolo was pretty frustrated by this match, and we'll talk about Joseph Pantsil becoming an instant star for the Galaxy. Pantsil, a record-breaking transfer. Big-time transfer news this weekend as well. DeAndre Yedlin to Cincy. Germán Berterame perhaps to Portland, and a young DP on the way to Charlotte from Celtic. Plus, we'll evaluate the crop of new managers after 180 minutes of action and hand out our extra time man of the match day and tell you what was whack from match day 3. All right, Doyle, before we get to best thing you saw, an email just came through my inbox. MLS All-Stars taking on the Liga MX All-Stars in the 2024 MLS All-Star game presented by Target on July 24th in Columbus. I may have to buy some additional plane tickets, maybe get a double bed in the hotel room for this match, because I have a family of young sickos who are coming into their own as MLS obsessives. Cameron Wiebe, shout out to him. Watch the full wrap-up, most of Countdown this weekend, and every single highlight pack on Apple TV, and he demanded it. He would not take no for an answer, so either I'm raising him right, or I'm taking him down a path of no return.
It sounds like you're taking him down a path of no return. For the sake of the child, to make sure that I don't have to call family services on you, is this child a sicko for the entire league, or is there one particular team? Because if you made a Red Bulls fan, Wiebe, we're going to have words with you.
We're trying to reverse, no offense, Red Bulls fans, we're trying to reverse some of the momentum created around that Cincinnati home playoff game last year. Both boys, mm-hmm. Cameron and Wyatt, still randomly chant, "Let's go Red Bulls." That's a rough. I have not yet explained to them the history of said club. Maybe they'll learn on their own.
They got it in the last 20 minutes of that game, right?
But they didn't really understand it. Somebody handed them a towel when they walked into the stadium. They ate free ice cream thanks to Bradley Wright Phillips and his access to the luxury boxes at Red Bull Arena that we were also granted access to. So for them, the New York Red Bulls are fans around them, swinging towels, and free ice cream. So you can't really blame them.
It sounds like they're fans of like the high life of the sort of 1% experience that
the luxury soccer experience. Maybe.
But to put this in context from a Red Bulls perspective, after that game, which was a bad loss, I wrote it was probably one of the 5 worst losses in club history when you consider the way it all happened, especially with John Tolkien, who had been the hero and, you know, the Jersey kid, the homegrown prospect, the sort of symbol of everything good, with him sort of being the goat in the PK shootout. Like, that was painful. And I immediately got emails from at least a half dozen friends of mine who are Red Bull fans, including Dan, who does such a great job running Metro Fanatic, being like, that doesn't even crack the top 10 for most painful losses in franchise history. So you be careful, Andrew.
I'm very careful.
Do not inflict this upon your children.
Yeah, no, big thanks to Austin FC for sending the boys to U Small jerseys this weekend as well. So, we also got jerseys from the Rapids. So, I don't know what's happening right now.
No.
Somebody's trying to set me up. No, big thanks to Austin. They're beautiful jerseys. It's like the first jersey my wife actually saw and liked. It didn't say, hey, go put that in a box in the basement. I mean, look, he's obsessed. Cameron, he's practicing in the basement. He is playing FIFA. He has transitioned out of only playing MLS teams in FIFA. So, that's good, and killing it in soccer.
And he's stealing your notebook. Oh, wait, no, he didn't steal your notebook. You just threw him under the bus. You blamed him for your own incompetence to everyone who would listen at the studio this weekend.
I don't remember that. My notebook's right here, sitting on my desk, Doyle. I didn't lose this notebook. It was always in my possession. Did I assume that my sons stole the notebook full of tactical musings that I made during the week? Did I tell producers, fellow folks on the shows, you, that I had all these wonderful insights that were no longer available because my kids stole the notebook because it had soccer fields written inside of it? Yes. Was it on my desk the entire time? Also, yes. So apologies to Cameron Wiebe and Wyatt Wiebe for making them the scapegoats for my own forgetfulness and, as you so rightfully put it, incompetence.
Sorry, that was probably the wrong word. I went in a little two-footed on that one. Let's turn it back real quick to the All-Star game. I have never loved the All-Star game. I do think that the format of MLS versus Liga MX that we first saw a couple years ago, that was the best version of the All-Star game. And I think this one, it's on July 24th and Leagues Cup kicks off 2 days later. So I like this makes so much sense to me as a mid-season event to bring the two leagues together and act as sort of like an appetizer for what will then subsequently follow over the next 3 weeks. I'm pretty jacked about this one. I don't know if I'm going to be flying out to Columbus with my family like certain people are, but this one will be fun to watch.
Think Mindy will count that as a family vacation?
I do not. I
got a couple months to work on her, though. We'll see if we can get it done. It's a big birthday present for Wyatt, who shares my birthday early in July. All right, let's get into the best thing you saw. We are not going to start with Miami, but I promise we will get to it. So before you groan, just know that there are a lot of big stories to hit in the meantime. So start us off. Get a palate cleanser here before we hit the Messi and Suarez talk, Doyle.
Yeah, we were kind of geeking out about the first 20 minutes of Minnesota versus Columbus when this was around the time where you thought your children had stolen your tactics notebook. Nobody had stolen Cameron Knowles' tactics notebook because he was brave enough to put his team out in a front foot, off ball, very aggressive high press against the Crew. And we don't see teams do that against the Crew over the last half of last year and into the playoffs. Teams do not press them because they're afraid that they will get cut up and get played through. And for 20, 25 minutes, that wasn't happening to Minnesota. But the cool part was you could see Columbus figuring it out in real time. And part of what they needed to do was have, I thought their midfield was a little too compact. And so they started dropping Alexandre Mattan out of the midfield shape so that it was Amundsen or Camacho could play those sort of third line passes through the press rather than over it. They had some success with that over final 20 minutes of the second half. But then at halftime, Wilfred Nancy drops Mattan or takes Mattan out for Christian Ramirez, a true center forward. And Ramirez, because he's a center forward, the midfielders aren't going to track him for Minnesota United. And he was dropping so deep into the play that the center backs were unwilling to go with him. So he was constantly available to receive those direct third line passes through the press with nobody on his back. And like instantly, literally the first possession of the second half, he plays, I want to say it was Cucho, he played through up the right side and it almost resulted in a goal. And then like a couple of minutes later. Yeah, it should have.
It should have been a penalty. Yaya Boa is the one on the end of the play eventually and is, in my opinion, fouled by Dane St. Clair. But
well, there you go. Yeah. And then, but 12 minutes later, it was Cucho who's playing as a center forward now dropping in and he releases a play up the right side that actually ends with Cucho scoring the first goal for Columbus. Like that cut and dried of a tactical battle happening between two good teams. And I am willing to say that Minnesota are a good team at this point. It was fun to watch play out, especially early in the season, because a lot of these games, because teams aren't sharp on the ball. A lot of these games are kind of like axe handles and machetes at 12 paces and who's going to make the bigger mistake. That wasn't really what this game was up until 5 minutes into second half stoppage time, at which point it was a pretty bad mistake from the Columbus Crew.
So let's dig in a little bit on the way that this press was set up. It was a 4-1-4-1 defensive shape, no? And it felt like they were able to put pressure on the Crew in area field that the Crew invited, but usually play out of it. So was it more the press or more just a little bit of rust for Columbus? Because once they realized, hey, if we move these four side to side a little bit and get sort of runs of different depths, we can play through the four, and now all of a sudden we're basically in the open field.
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of both, right? And part of the crew knocking the rust off was after the first 20, 25 minutes, your energy drops. And if you go back and you watch the tape, you might write it down in Cameron's tactics notebook that
I'll just ask Cameron, he'll explain it to me. No worries.
The angles and speed of the Minnesota front line in particular, but also I thought Will Trapp at defensive midfield, the angles and speed were much higher in the first 20, 25 minutes. And then after they didn't get the goal, we usually see teams sort of retreat into a mid block at that point. Tactical periodization is what they used to call it 10, 15 years ago. But you could call it whatever you want. It's just like, okay, our plan for the first 20 minutes kind of worked, didn't get us a goal. Let's be compact now and hard to play through and get our legs back. Minnesota didn't do that. They kept pressing, and you could see that they weren't getting as close to the ball. And you could see that Columbus's shape was just better. Like Columbus weren't all clumped up in a 30-yard, square on that left side. They had a couple outlets through or a couple outlets around, and they started being able to take those. So I think, look, I would be really encouraged by this if I were a Minnesota fan, even though it didn't lead to a goal, and even though they actually did kind of concede a goal because of it, because like the pieces are there for them to do this in conjunction with being a ball playing team as well, because there was no Emmanuel Reynoso still, and we didn't get to see the full setup with the first choice players. And I know Reynoso is not going to be a great pressing player, but he doesn't have to be. He just has to be in the right place at the right time, and then when those turnovers happen, do what Lucho Acosta did over the past 2 years for FC Cincinnati. So it's all there. And I think it's been a really encouraging start from the Loons.
Hey, congratulations, by the way, as we talk about the crew and how they eventually got into this game. It probably should have won it based on the missed PK call. Again, that's just my opinion. But Tani Olaseyi, wonderful goal at the death. 90 whatever minute in second half stoppage time, finds a way to get into it, a crazy angle. That's two games now this season for Tani, who came up through MLS Next Pro and Loons 2, has an assist to Pookie, and now a game-tying goal in the home opener. That is absolutely sick. Now, the flip side for the crew is, like, this is what was the issue last year, Doyle, right? Until Wilfred Nancy kind of put found a teaching moment, let's say. In the Orlando match last year, late on in the fall, or maybe mid-fall, was that teaching moment. But this is a team that gave up the most points in stoppage time of anybody in MLS last year, and then won MLS Cup because they figured it out. On this game-tying goal, there are four 50-50 headers off a throw-in that the crew lose. Patrick Schulte, who has been absolutely steady, certainly was during the playoff run all the way to MLS Cup, comes out of his goal on a play when Tani has his back to him. That didn't make sense to me. I think if he's on his line, he has a much better chance of saving this very tight angle shot, and there's not enough pressure on Olaseyi when he gets on the ball and turns to shoot. So this is, I wouldn't say a sign of things to come for the crew. It's a worrying moment that I'm sure Wilfred will go back to the drawing board, back to the tape, back to his team in a more positive way than I am right now and say, hey, look, don't let this come back. We can be the best team in MLS. We won't be if this is, again, part of our DNA. Eliminating this helped us win MLS Cup. We could win anything this year. But if you have plays like that, it's unlikely that you're going to do so. All right, buckle up. Best things I saw, always plural. The Messi chess goal while Robin Jansen is stuck in the net thrashing about like a tuna. Meanwhile, Rodrigo Schlegel is pulling the back of Messi's jersey in a game of tug of war that goes extremely wrong. This goal, Doyle, Messi does not kick it in. He sort of chests it down and it just rolls in because everyone's so worried about grabbing, pulling, stopping Messi that they're not paying attention to the ball. It reminded me just a little bit of that Carlos Vela goal against San Jose, where he sort of stands on the goal line after cutting multiple guys, looks around, and is like, oh, nobody can stop me? Cool, I'll just poke this ball into the back of the net.
Yeah, that was that goal, the way he finished that. Well, first of all, the goal itself Vela scored was brilliant, but then the finish was sort of the cherry on the cake. This was a little different because I think Messi did originally intend to chest it down and then slam it home with his left foot, but he was being grabbed. And then when he finally was able to sort of get out of Schlegel's grip and he was close enough to stab the ball home, he realizes nobody's going to be there to clear the ball off the line. And like, he does not need to touch the ball for it to actually cross the line and become a goal. So at that point, his flex is like not even touching the ball. It was absurd. And it was hilarious. And it was, it was the best Miami have ever looked, period. This was the best game Inter Miami.
Absolutely. And we're talking about the finish, but by the way, it's Jordi Alba and Luis Suarez sort of advancing up the field and shredding a back line and finding space and cutting through with runs and chipping a goalkeeper. And normally you'd see the ball go in the back of the net, but no, Messi's the one to finish it off. How about Chicho Arango, the snow angel celebration? That was absolutely sick. I want to say there's like 3 inches of snow at that point in Utah. The orange ball was out before the snow started falling. Then they had a delay. Then they came back. Then they had to get the shovels out just to clear off the 18-yard box lines. And then you couldn't see the field. Then you couldn't see each other, basically. Chicho Arango scores right before halftime on a very slick, like, sequence of play for RSL in a literal blizzard and goes for the snow angel. That was amazing. And then Matty Crooks afterwards put the icing on top, so to speak. This was his quote. "That was absolutely crazy. That's coming from a man who plays in the championship. I couldn't see my feet." Matty Crooks is 6'4". ... "Diego Luna couldn't see his legs. This man has a special place in my heart." What a wonderful quote that is. Steve Cherundolo is frustrated. We'll talk about that here in a little bit. I also want to shout out the Rapids and their fans. Wonderful TIFO honoring Joan Dobrinski. Longtime super fan of the club. Sadly passed away. But to see those fans honor her in that way, really touching stuff. The best part about this league, this sport, ultimately for me, is the community. Love watching the games, love talking about it, but it's the people around it. Shout out to the Rapids for honoring one of their own. And then last but not least, it just came through. Have you ever seen a GAM trade in MLS, DeAndre Yedlin to FC Cincinnati for $172,799 GAM dollars, Doyle? Yeah, this is like something on sale on the shelf. They're like, yeah, if we make it $7.99 and not $8, somebody's going to buy it quicker. It's so
I didn't realize you could cut up GAM like that. Same. I thought it had to be in increments of like $5,000 or $10,000. I thought it would have to be like $175,000 or, $165,000 or $160,000, something like that. I didn't realize you could do the discount rack thing. It's weird. It's such a great move for Cincinnati. Just because like they did not have a starting right wing back, and now they have one of the best in the league. And DeAndre Yedlin is, he's not as good at providing the final ball at Santi Arias, but he's better going end line to end line. He creates more penetration, drags guys away from those center forwards. He will be a perfect fit for them. And for Miami, this obviously means that there's another move coming. And like, oh, by the way, Sergio Roberto, he's out of contract with Barcelona this summer. He said last week he wants to play in MLS, and he's a right back. So, I was able to confirm they do have at least one international roster slot open. So it's not too tough to do the math on that one.
I wonder, though, on the $7.99 part on the back end, is this like FC Cincinnati, like rummaging through the couch cushions? Like, why? At some point, Tom Bogert or somebody's going to have to explain to me why exactly this happened, why now, and why it hasn't happened before. It's good stuff. All right, let's dive in. Big topics for match day 3. If you want to hit the fast forward 15-second button for, I don't know how long, 10 minutes or so, go ahead and do it now. But when Inter Miami beats arguably the second best team in the entire league from 2023, one of the best teams expectation wise in 2024 in Orlando, 5-0, just runs them off the field. They're going to lead the show. Luis Suarez, turns out he might not be washed. Doyle, 2 goals. Messi, 2 goals. Robert Taylor gets a goal. And Inter Miami have what Tata Martino calls maybe our most complete game since I arrived in running Orlando off the park. We'll get to the Lions side in a second because they got Tigres this week. What did you see from Miami in this match? And is there egg on the face of everyone who focused on Suarez's injuries or his desire to talk about those injuries rather than his production last year in Brazil?
Yeah, there is. I I was kind of ranting about it over the past couple of weeks. I can't believe how much stock people put into a couple of preseason results. People talk about Miami's defense is going to be terrible. If you look at their preseason, they only gave up multiple goals twice, and it was to the two Saudi teams after traveling around the world to play in that heat and to play against the top Saudi teams who each have essentially like 9 or 10 DPs. Like those teams are they have like three times the budget of any MLS team. So yeah, of course they look bad. And of course they lost those two games. But other than that, their defense was fine. Week one, they got a win over RSL and played, I think, pretty okay for week one. And then they went cross country on short rest and got handled by the Galaxy, except, oh, wait, they have match winners in attack and they have match winners in midfield and they have match winner in goal. So they were able to get a point on the road in a situation where I don't think any other team other than Columbus could reasonably have expected to get a point in a game like that. And they come home and just destroy Orlando City in the way that you would expect a team with the greatest player of all time and one of the greatest left backs of all time and one of the greatest center forwards of all time to destroy teams. It was... I still can't get over the takes I have heard about Inter Miami over the past month. Like, everybody's saying, oh, they're old, they're going to get hurt. Like, yeah, these guys are probably going to miss a couple of games. But as far as misses games, they have Leo Campana. If Sergio Busquets misses games, they have Jean Mota. If they need to rest Messi, they went out and got Julian Gressel, who had three assists in this one. Who is one of the top chance creators in MLS over the past decade. They went out and they got Freire, who is a veteran of Liga MX. He's 29 years old. And we know that 99 times out of 100, success in Liga MX translates to success in MLS. They have young players on every level who are breaking through into the first team and contributing in real and measurable ways. I said a month ago, before the season started, this is the deepest and best MLS roster I have ever seen. And since then, they went out and added Federico Redondo, who was maybe the second best prospect in all of Argentina. And it's maybe not even fair to call him a prospect because he is 21 years old and he has been productive at a high level at both central midfield and defensive midfield. So now there's more depth in another spot where they needed it. I am so confused by the discourse around this team. I feel like people lost their minds because they wanted a team to be the bad guys. They wanted someone to kind of hate on. It reminded me of MLS or NBA coverage a little bit. And that's fine because that greases the wheel. Get a focal point team in the same way that Beckham's Galaxy did. Someone that you kind of have to have an opinion on. I will tell you my opinion. Inter Miami have the best and deepest roster I have ever seen in MLS. I don't think that they have played perfectly through three games. Certainly they were bad last weekend against the Galaxy. They got a point anyway. They have 7 points through three games. Last year's Supporters Shield winner, FC Cincinnati, had 7 points through three games. The 2022 Supporters Shield winner, LAFC, had 7 points through three games. The 2021 Supporters Shield winner, New England Revolution, who set the single season points record, had 7 points through three games. I think Inter Miami's pretty good, man. And I think they're much closer to the team that we saw this past weekend. Absolutely ripped the soul out of Orlando City than the one that we saw hanging on for dear life last weekend in LA. And I'm looking forward to seeing whether they can make that translate to CONCACAF Champions Cup, because they have said that their biggest goal, the trophy they want to win this year, is the continental title. Let's see it happen.
Lucky number 7. I feel good about my takes in this arena. Messi for MVP, Inter Miami for MLS Cup. I was on this show. I was on Apple TV saying, I don't think they should care about Supporters Shield. Obviously, what I think doesn't matter at all for Inter Miami. And it seems like they do care about the Supporters Shield, Doyle.
Yeah.
Based on the quotes, based on what they're saying, this is Tata. It's really good to arrive with a little breathing room at this checkpoint that we set for ourselves to start off in this manner and get the most points possible before tournaments like Copa America, Leagues Cup, and everything that is to come. Now, that's the challenge for Miami when it comes to the Shield. All the different things in the middle of the year, whether it's CONCACAF or Leagues Cup, and certainly Copa America if Argentina makes a run, or even if they don't, all those things will get very complicated for this team. So maybe that's where the Shield goes to die. But Messi, talking to Diego Valeri afterwards, basically said the same thing of like, yeah, we're where we want to be, and we think we can keep doing this, and we want to compete for everything. And when the GOAT tells you that, and he says, no, we're up 5-0. I'm not coming off early. Play me for the entire game, Tata. You start to get a feeling for one, where his head is at, and where Messi's head is at is going to be contagious.
Yeah.
To the rest of the team. Like, you follow this dude where he goes. And honestly, Orlando City, talk about their soul being ripped out. It was like the foundation of the project got ripped out. Like, what do you expect from Oscar's teams? Number one, they're going to be organized. Number two, they're not going to make mistakes that beat themselves. Number three, they might have an issue in build-up play or breaking down a low block. They might not be as creative as you want to be, a little ponderous in possession. All of those things we saw last year. But the baseline for all of 2023, and for really any Oscar team ever, has been that they don't beat themselves. And in this match, I know Miami was rampant, but I mean, Cesar Arujo is passing the ball to Miami in the final third. They're leaving massive gaps between their lines. And yes, Miami was killer in counterattacking situations, but Messi, Suarez, and hell, Robert Taylor, Gressel, they should kill you if it's even numbers in the final third and they have time to build momentum in their attacks. That is what should happen. I was shocked by the performance from Orlando City.
It was a shocking performance.
And so was Oscar Pereja. Like, he, from minute one to the end of the game, Oscar said, it didn't look like us. It didn't look like us. I mean, that's a huge issue. And then if Suarez is in rhythm, he doesn't need four or five chances. He needs two. Look at the goals he's scoring. The first one off the giveaway, there's so much gravity around Messi that two defenders basically shade to Messi and leave Suarez alone for a cutback at the near post. You get your just desserts when you pull the ball out of the back of the net. Like, that's what you get. It's the second goal, Doyle, that would have me worried if I was opposing defenders, where Suarez is basically throwing down, if I remember right, Wilder Cartagena. I mean, like, spiking him, then combining with Gressel, being the stronger, more agile, more in-rhythm player in high-leverage areas, and doing the thing that we've seen Suarez do over and over and over, which is know exactly how to shape his body, prepare his feet, and get a shot off before anyone else can react. And oh, by the way, he's an elite finisher. So yeah, it's low into the back post.
Yeah, he's simply one of the greatest all-around center forwards that we have ever seen. And now he's playing in MLS after scoring 26 goals and adding 17 assists in 4,500 minutes last year in Brazil. I can't believe people watched him struggle for two games and decided he was cooked. I still am... shocking, like I'm still shocked by that. To your point about Messi's gravity, this was the issue I think that we saw, especially against the Galaxy. There was a sense among the non-Barca guys on the team in that game that their job was not to play soccer. Their job was just to get the ball to Messi, Busquets, and Suarez, and Alba to a lesser extent. Like, that was, you know, they were picking the ball up in good spots, and Messi has more gravity than any player in history. So they're picking up the ball in good spots, and they have space around them to drive the game forward or to take a quick touch or a layoff, and they're not doing it because they're just looking to get the ball back to one of those guys. And so the whole thing became ponderous and bad giveaways, and broke down when they entered the final third up until the final 10 minutes when they were able to attack 11v10 and get that great late goal. In this game, Gressel in particular was just playing soccer. And we know that Gressel is, you know, a very, very good borderline elite player in this league. And he seemed to have the confidence to be the playmaker that we know he is, instead of always just immediately looking to get the ball to Messi, Busquets, or Suarez. He was out there balling. And Robert Taylor, to a lesser extent, and Diego Gomez, they were out there balling. And that's what needs to happen for Miami to be the team that I think they can be and that they were on the day, is the guys around them need to just play soccer and need to take advantage of the gravity that Messi and Suarez have, because that gravity is what eventually forces teams to break down and concede goals. And look, every defensive system in the world is high-stakes gambling. You are taking something off the table here, and you're putting it on the table for your opponent to use elsewhere. And for 20 years, when Messi has been on the field, the gamble you're taking is, okay, we have to put two guys around him and shade 5 yards closer to him than we normally would for anyone. Even an MVP caliber number 10 doesn't get defended and schemed against and game planned for the way Messi does. And in the first 20 minutes of this game, he barely touched the ball. And because of that, Gressel and Yedlin on the overlap and even Alba, like, they had so much more time to make plays, and they had the confidence this week to make them. And so anybody who's going against Miami from here on out has to take that into consideration, because if you're going to sell out to stop Messi, then you're going to leave Gressel. If you're going to sell out to stop Suarez, then you're going to leave Gomez. Like, you have to figure that out. You have to make the right gamble, and you have to hope that these guys are off their game on the day. Otherwise, you're probably not going to lose 5-0, but you're probably not going to win.
More Miami this week. Going to Nashville. CONCACAF Champions Cup kicks off the round of 16. That's 9 p.m. Eastern on Thursday. And then on Sunday, Miami hosting CF Montreal. Should be an interesting match there as well. Let's quickly hit Orlando. We sort of, you know, we buried them where they deserve to be buried. I mean, Oscar did it too. Tigres this week. Tigres not in fine form. Are you concerned about Orlando? Is this a bigger picture issue for them, or one game against the greatest and Oscar's going to use this one to kick them on to better things and back to their quote unquote real selves?
Yeah, Oscar's got a lot of equity with us. We've been around the league a long time, and he's been one of the best coaches in league history, because he can get his guys to be organized. And we saw them start slow last year after that great series against Tigres in what was then CCL. And they eventually figured it out, turned it around. I am sure that they are going to figure it out at some point, probably very soon this year. Where I am concerned is they are so flank heavy in their attack. They're not generating anything up the middle. And that was, I think, the limiting factor on last year's team. And I said, heading into the offseason, they need to go out and get an elite number 10 who can create chances up the gut, operate in zone 14. And they got Nico Ladero, and Nico Ladero in his prime was that. But at this point, he's a depth piece, a guy who can soak up midseason minutes, maybe come in late in the game when you're pushing and, you know, serve a final ball. But he's not a guy who's going to run the game as a number 10. They still don't have that. And I think if there's something that's going to differentiate them from the absolute top of the league, it's that. Like, they don't have an elite chance creator who operates in that part of the field, unless Oscar says, okay, Martin Ojeda, this is going to be your spot. And Ojeda was primarily a winger in Argentina and almost exclusively a winger last year for Orlando City. But during, I think, his final season with Vélez Sarsfield, he spent a lot of time playing as number 10, and he was in the 99th percentile of literally every chance creation statistic, like all of them. So I think he can hit the last ball. Oscar's going to have to learn to trust him. He's going to have to learn to put a guy out there who maybe takes something off the table for you a little bit defensively, but he adds so much more in attack that it raises the level of the entire team.
Congratulations, DeAndre Yedlin, part of a 5-0 beatdown. And now on this Monday, training in Cincinnati with his new club. Let's go to Cincy. They got a big week. Monterrey, coming up on Thursday. Brandon Vasquez in red hot form for Rayados, and they have a new right wing back. Yuya Kubo, your shift is over. You can leave the wall. Go back, you know, go south of the wall, my man. Back to the midfield for you. Cincinnati beat Chicago 2-1 in Chicago this weekend. Luke Orellano missed that match to a family situation. Aaron Bupinza got a goal after Rafa Shijos basically gave him the goal. Shades of Cesar Araujo in that one. And Miles and Miazga started together for the first time in the league, and Miles Robinson got his first goal for Cincinnati. How does Yedlin fit in? Because I'm not sure that I'm taking a ton away from the match against the Fire this weekend in like broad strokes. But how does Yedlin fit into this project, and where does Cincy stand?
I mean, it's plug and play for him at right wing back. They ask a lot of the wing back in terms of end line coverage in that system. And that's where Santi Arias actually struggled a little bit last year. He couldn't get into the attack and then reliably get back to defend, because a lot of time we call it a 3-5-2, but a lot of time, you know, Cincinnati are defending with a five back there. They are totally happy to absorb and counter. Yedlin improves them on the defensive side of the ball. We know that he has habitually throughout his career kind of fallen asleep on the back post in defense. That is much less of an issue when you're playing as a wing back as opposed to a fullback in a four. So I think it's a good fit there. In the attack, he stretches the field both in terms of width and in terms of attacking depth. And that will, I think, cause opposing back lines to shade towards him a little bit. And in theory, that gives guys like Bupenza, Corey Baird, you know, if they bring in another forward, it should give those guys a little bit more space in the box against the defenders. I see it as a win across the board for FC Cincinnati, especially because this is a win now team and DeAndre Yedlin is in his prime and like he's not going anywhere. They have answered the question that they have about right wing back until 2027. It's just more excellent work from that front office to get a player who can't, like, he's won trophies a lot in his career, and we won't be surprised to see him win more with this team.
Here's the other thing I would say. Santi Arias has this pedigree, and he also has an injury history. Think about the playoffs last year. Santi Arias was not available for the biggest matches that they played. It was, are we going to start Ray Gattis, God bless him, or Alves Powell? Neither are terrible options. Neither are probably the option that you want to have to push yourself into MLS Cup. DeAndre Yedlin, his playing history as of late, he doesn't miss matches. He's a guy that you can say, yeah, he's probably going to play in 30 games minimum for us each season. Now, knock on wood, the future is not the present or the past. But part of that is like, hey, here's a cog in our machine that we can rely upon, that we think will be there because of his ability to stay healthy in the very biggest moments. The flip side of this for the Fire is like, man, this is such a Fire match. The home opener, and you drop an anvil on your own foot. You give the ball to Aaron Bupinza at the top of the 18-yard box for no reason. Rafa Shijos, they're playing in the three-man back line. Rafa's on the left, and he just sort of blindly hits a ball across his own 18 directly to Aaron Bupinza, who says, oh, thank you. I'll finish that and do a backflip. Yeah, fine. And then the game winner for Miles Robinson, Doyle, how do you let this ball bounce on the corner kick? I mean, that's just an organizational issue, no?
Yeah, I mean, it's a Fire issue at this point. It's just the type of game that they always lose. It's just what it is. You know, they find a way, no matter who the players are, it seems, they find a way to be the Chicago Fire in moments where their fans are begging for them to be something more. And I don't know that
God, that's Kellen Acosta siren behind you, yeah. By the way.
I don't know that Kellen Acosta getting healthy and 90 minutes fit and into the lineup, I don't know if that fixes it. I don't know if, you know, getting a true left back so that they can go to a four, I don't know if that fixes it. I will say they spent $12 million on Hugo Kuypers. He has one shot in 192 minutes on the field. He is a number nine who has always needed service. This is based upon his profile, but also based upon the scouting reports of folks that you and I have both talked to from Europe. He's always needed service. The Fire were 29th in key passes last year, dead last, and they were 24th in expected assists last year. And they did not go out and get a playmaker to add to this team. So it's the Chicago Fire. I admire the fact that they're trying to dig themselves out of this hole. The guy who's had the shovel in his hands for the past 5 years is maybe not the guy to do it.
Here's what I will say. Early in the season, it can be easy to, because we've missed soccer, haven't watched soccer, have prognosticated and guessed and imagined what we might see, to take these big takeaways, whether it be for Inter Miami or Orlando or the Fire. Like, yeah, we have some data, but not enough to have any context. So I'm going to let the Fire have a pass. They took a stomach punch here. I think the Andrew Gutman injury is bigger for them than maybe we've talked about, because to go to the service piece of this, it's Haile Selassie on the right crossing, and there's almost nothing coming from anywhere else as far as service from wide areas into the box. Gutman would have provided that, but he's hurt for now. So I'm going to be patient, but I know if I was leaving that stadium as a Fire fan, I would have deja vu. Some real feelings of deja vu.
What I will say is Andrew Gutman's a nice player, but if your whole system and whole approach falls apart because Andrew Gutman picked up a hamstring injury, then the thing wasn't probably going to work in the first place.
All right. Sorry about that, Fire fans. Hope it's a more positive week for you and perhaps weekend as well. It's a good week if you're a Galaxy fan. Everybody's saying, are the Galaxy back? No, they're not back. Doyle, you and I agree on this. My shrine agrees. We just have a flicker of candlelight here, because the Galaxy will not be back until there are trophies in the trophy case, until they are the dominant force in the Western Conference. That's the standard that they set for themselves, that they make you walk through before you play any game in Carson at that stadium. You got to see their trophies. They've made the playoffs twice in 7 years. A couple good moments doesn't mean they're back. Are the fans back? Yes, absolutely the fans are back. They feel like they enacted change at the club, which they did. The club has responded. They've changed sort of their ethos as it comes to building the team. So the fans are back. The party's going on in the parking lot. Congratulations to them. And they got to see an away win against San Jose that was pretty dominant. 3-1, Joe Paintsil, here we go. Goal, assist, absolutely a menace in the open field. How high should we be on the Galaxy? Is it all about Paintsil? Is there something deeper here?
So I think there's something much deeper here. I think fans are correct to be very high on this team. I think fans are correct to be jazzed about the first two games, because the Galaxy looked good in ways that are related to their personnel, including and maybe especially Paintsil, but they also looked good in ways that are related to sort of under the radar things tactically on the defensive side. The personnel first. I mean, Paintsil is just a hand in glove fit for what they needed out of a DP winger. He is always stretching the field. He is dynamic in the box as a goal scorer, but as we saw, he's also a provider when he is able to get on the end of the through ball. And oh, by the way, in Ricky Puig, they have the second greatest through ball artist in the entire league. So they're marrying their personnel to a tactical identity. That identity that Greg Vanney has always wanted has been a foot on the ball, heavy possession team. But he's actually backed off of that in the first 2 weeks in a big way, week one against Miami, which was the right choice. They only had 37 possession. They tried to counterattack Miami to death. On a different day, they could have had four goals if, you know, Drake Callender didn't stand on his head. But I thought that was the right choice, but it was also an outlier. They're not going to play that way against anybody else in the league. In this game, though, they were varying their approach between pure counterattack and then getting on the ball and building from the back anytime the Quakes weren't bringing their line way upfield. And so you end up with goals like the first one, where it kind of felt like a counterattack, but it's actually like a 12 or 13 pass sequence from very deep in the Galaxy's own half. So what they did was just, it was almost like the crew. They were just, you know, hitting so many passes between those guys on the back line, the deep lying midfield, that they were able to suck San Jose upfield, then play through them, and then get out essentially on the break. It was beautiful soccer. I'm not sure that it's a type of soccer we would have seen from the Galaxy at any point over the past couple of years.
Here's what I'll say about Greg Vanney and that desire to play with the ball. I don't think Greg Vanney is dogmatic, at least for the time being, about it being strictly buildup that creates opportunities for the Galaxy. I think actually he was disappointed last year in their inability to create any sort of danger from transition. And that was actually where Jovetic was at his best. If you think back to that like super sub season where it seemed like every time he came off the bench, he was scoring a goal. It was often in situations like we saw in his goal in this match where he doesn't have to deal with two sort of set center backs who can see the game in front of them and just bracket him. And his movement is pretty obvious in those situations. But if you have to run backwards, if you have to track a winger, if you have to decide if you're going to step out and support, and all of a sudden the gap between the center backs is bigger, or there's just one center back in that area for Jovetic to deal with, that's where Jovetic is going to be at his best. He doesn't create for you. He doesn't drop in and get on the ball. He might be sort of a wall pass every now and then, but he is in the box moving, looking for service. And those players are going to thrive when the opposing defense is a little bit more scattered because, oh, wow, Joseph Pantel's running at our right back or is past that. I have to step out and show. Grueso is not in the right positions. Now, credit to Grueso. He's had a tough preseason, hasn't been around a ton for San Jose, so still working his way back, but not his best game. Like, this is, I think, what Vanney wants. He wants his team to be all in on whatever phase they're in at that moment. If it's buildup to create chances, be all in on that moment. If it's transition, be all in on that moment, but then also respond and understand what that moment means for you from a defensive sense, Doyle. And that's one of the rest defense. How many times have we talked about this? And it feels like, yes, it's just two games. Respect the lack of data. It feels like there is a much better understanding about how to organize yourself behind the ball when you have it than they've had in the past.
Yeah, I mean, and you could see it. I put it in my column. You could see it in the highlights of, was it the first or the second goal? The one where Mark Delgado makes the inside out run. I think that was the first goal.
Which, by the way, is exactly how they scored against Miami, right, too.
And so because they hold on to the ball the entire time and there's no turnover and they score the goal, there's no commentary to really make about the defense, except if you go back and you look, Mickey Yamane, who is the right fullback, as soon as Delgado starts pushing up and vacating the center of the pitch, Yamane comes inside and he starts acting as essentially a defensive midfielder. And it's not to get on the ball and dictate the play. It's so that he is in that position if there is a turnover. And if there is a turnover, he is in a spot to, if not immediately win the ball back, at least blunt the attack and give everyone else on the Galaxy a chance to get back and get into some sort of defensive shape and not be so easily gashed in transition. Because, up until this year, we had the type of data where we could look and say, okay, the Galaxy are the worst team in the league in terms of expected goals allowed in transition, or bottom five team in the league. Like, year after year after year, that's where they were. And that was before Greg Vanney became head coach, and it has continued now with Greg Vanney as head coach. Through two games, it is entirely different. Just, they do not give up those chances because their shape in possession, they have guys who are aware of where they need to be in case there is a turnover. It is a thing not many folks think about. It is like one of the most boring things to talk about. It is absolutely essential if any team is going to be good defensively, you have to have good rest defense. And through two games, the Galaxy's rest defense has been, I'm not going to say excellent, it has been very, very good. Yamane, I think, is the biggest part of that. His awareness in both directions, you could see why this guy made best 11 three or four times in the J League. But you could, like, in that clip, you could see him literally scanning, looking for, where he needs to be on the field. And usually when guys are scanning, like Xavi was the famous, he would scan more than anyone else. He was always, we associated with being in possession, looking for space, trying to find a pocket so that he would be available to be the next link in the chain of those great Barcelona passing sequences. And people, when they think about scanning, that's what they think about. Yamane scans more defensively in those positions than any fullback I've seen in MLS. And I think that it's kind of translated to, you know, Edwin Cerrillo through two games has been excellent.
I was just going to say his name.
Yeah, and he's a young defensive midfielder, and it's hard to be a young defensive midfielder. There aren't a ton of them who understand team shape at a high enough level to play it week in, week out. Cerrillo might be getting there. And you know that Brugman's very good at it as well. So there are so many reasons to be high on the Galaxy if you're a Galaxy fan right now.
That last point on Brugman and Cerrillo is so crucial, and it goes back to why Galaxy fans have been happy with Wilkuns so far. There was a clear need, and it was exacerbated by the fact that Brugman went down and the form dropped for LA last year, for a Cerrillo, for a player who can, if not do all the things that Brugman does, do the right things in that position at the right price, at the right age profile, should something happen. The other thing I'd say about Yamane is on the game, on the goal that San Jose scores, and congrats to Preston Judd for scoring against his old team, like Gabriel Peck needs to get more pressure on the ball. It's pretty lackadaisical pressure from him in that moment. Who is the guy screaming at him and the rest of the team after that play? It's Mickey Yamane. So from the jump, it's not just, hey, come in, be sort of a silent contributor. Clearly, Yamane is a leader in ways already in that team. And that is a huge step in the right direction for this team as well. Before we move on here, and I think Gabriel Peck will start to show more as he gets more comfortable in LA, for what it's worth. Like right now it's painful, but you know, Peck is younger. He's transitioning really for the first time to a new place, a new language. I think he just got married. So Galaxy fans, give him a little bit of time. What about the other side in a DP signing? Carlos Vela was the big rumor. Tom is reporting that that deal is losing steam. What's your like minute thought on Vela fitting in LA? Sorry, not in LA. That's where he is. He might be back with LAFC. It seems like this is perhaps a negotiating move, but in San Jose, I should say.
Yeah, I mean, he was still an elite chance creator in the league last year, but he doesn't do it as a number 10. I think he could play as a number 10 if they wanted him to. But I'm not, like, he's 35 years old. He's never really been happy anywhere except LA or Sociedad. If I were the Quakes, I would be looking in a different direction. He also doesn't really fit the timeline for this team. Like, this is a team, they're not super young anymore, but Vela's 35. You can make an argument based on numbers, but I don't like that argument.
All right,
but they absolutely do need to add something, because this is a poor performance again from San Jose.
I would just, again, on the data points, I'd remind people Pellegrino starts in this game. He just got into San Jose, just figuring out what they're doing. Guerrero is a little bit behind. Back line, two new changes probably coming with signings. So let's wait a while on San Jose, but this was not a vintage moment for Lucci and the Quakes. Let's talk new managers. Doyle, let's start with two new ones, Portland and DC. Christian Benteke goes off with an injury before the game even starts. Portland go up 2-0 and blow a lead in the last 20 minutes. Here come DC United, Troy Lesane, and for Portland, maybe here comes Germán Berterame. What do you want to start with, Timbers or DC?
Let's start with Timbers because of the Berterame news. I think if you had offered Phil Neville 4 points from two games without any DPs, he would probably have taken that before the season started. Obviously, I think he'd be very disappointed to have blown the 2-0 lead in this one. But learning experience and maybe learning experience for the manager as well, in terms of not throwing out a back five for the final 30 minutes, because that was when DC were the better team, were the better team throughout. But the last 30 minutes, once Portland went to a back five, they had none of the ball and they could not defend. At any time they came up into midfield and tried to play, they immediately lost the ball and launched a DC United counterattack. So I think there's plenty for Phil Neville to work on, but I don't think we should lose sight of the fact that Portland probably overperformed expectations through two games. And now they will be hopefully getting Evander back and adding Germán Berterame, who, if you watch Liga MX, you know him well from being very good for Monterrey, which is one of the biggest teams in Liga MX. And he was excellent last year during the League's Cup, before, ironically, getting injured on the turf at Providence Park.
And if you're a real sicko, you remember the San Luis days where he was a terror, and that's what got him to Rayados.
Right. He fits. I think he starts as the nine in a 4-3-3, but he's a or a 4-2-3-1 maybe when Evander comes back. But he's not a traditional nine, man. He's a littler guy. He likes to get the ball to feet. He's not a pure fox in the box, right? He's not like his goal scoring numbers compared to Raul Ruiz Diaz. Like he's not that level of goal scorer. It's almost a guy who you would like more in a team that plays with a little bit more of the ball. And Phil Neville has, like he said to me last summer, he's like, I don't think teams need possession. I think possession is overrated. So it's a little bit of a weird fit. And the number, $15 million, this would be
the number.
He would be tied for, I think, the third. Tom had a tweet out on it. I think
it'd be Barco. It'd be Barco.
Yeah.
The only other ones are Almada and Pity Martinez.
Yeah. So the biggest signing in terms of money in league history outside of Atlanta. That is a huge expenditure. To me, it seems like a lot for a guy who might not be the perfect fit.
I do like him in transition. Mm-hmm. I think some of his best moments with Rayados have been in those moments. And look, running with some of the wingers that Portland will put out there, whether it's Moreno or Dairon, et cetera, if they go get another one, because they do have another DP spot open, like that's interesting to me. He is 25. So he is a very much in prime, to go back to your point about Liga MX production, translating to MLS. Like there are a lot of markers here that you would say, oh yeah, that makes complete sense. The only one that is potentially the issue is the $15 million, just because that creates production expectations. It creates a environment where, like, you know, a 10-7 season probably isn't enough based on the amount of money that you paid for him.
Right.
Right? Like he needs to be dominant. And maybe that's not the way clubs look at it. Maybe that's an outside looking in thing. We're like, hey, big number, big expectations. We need this number of goals. But given the way the roster is constructed, they kind of need that. It's like him and Felipe Mora, right? Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Bertarame going forward. But a great result for DC United, no doubt about it. More signing news. Tom is reporting that Leal Abada, the Celtic winger, Israeli international, 22 years old, has scored double digits in both his full season with Celtic, is coming to Charlotte. I think the fee, well, it's rumored out there, like around the 8 million mark, something like that, less than 10 million. 22-year-old will be a young DP, which is good for the cap and also good for U22 spots. And we know Dean Smith wants to play with true wingers. Not sure Abada is like get to the inline and cross type of winger, though I struggle to translate Celtic players to anywhere else. A lot of their players have really translated to higher levels, though. So yeah, this could be a huge signing, Doyle. If he's a finisher at the back post and they get another DP, it fits into what Dean Smith is doing. And so far with a 1-1 draw in Vancouver and a win at home, like all's well that ends well so far for Charlotte.
Yeah, it's going, I think, better than expected for Charlotte through two games. And a lot of it has been because the wingers have been so involved and so dynamic, especially off the ball. And in theory, Abada is better than any of the other wingers on the roster. So seems like a good fit. I can't say that I've seen a ton of him with Celtic or Israel, but I've seen a few games and you see some highlights, and he looks the part of a guy who could be, a double digit goal scorer in MLS and maybe double digit assists as well. As you said, not get to the end line and cross, but almost more like what we've seen of Paintsil in with the Galaxy, where he's always sort of riding the line and is equally adept at either, receiving and going direct at goal or sort of drifting into the Man City zones and hitting and pull back across the six. Now they just need to figure out if Enzo Capetti is the guy to actually finish those pullbacks off, because they're 2 weeks. The answer is not really.
Dummy intentional or not intentional?
I'm giving him credit for that one. It looked intentional to me. Also, you got to give him credit for there was a PK awarded in the first half that was incorrectly then, overturned.
I disagree with you on that one, but
okay. I thought it was a softly given PK, and he was right to overturn it.
I didn't think it was a PK. Sorry. Yeah.
But Capetti picked up the ball. Capetti was ready to take the penalty, and he was not the guy to do that in week one. And that actually, you know, sitting with Bradley Wright Phillips and Sasha Kleshton and the gang in the green room, like, they were concerned about that. They want their number nine to be vicious and hungry for goals. And they hadn't seen that of Capetti. And hopefully, for Charlotte fans' sake, they will get some of that from him in the weeks to come.
All right, let's keep it rolling. Laurent Courtois, his first win in Major League Soccer as a manager, 2-1 on the road in Dallas, sort of mirror formations in this one, the 3-4-2-1, both teams playing it. Jesse Martinez gets the game winner, his first goal for Montreal, ran past Omar Gonzalez. Nicosi Tafari was not in the starting lineup for this Dallas team, which is a little bit of an issue for them. He's their most reliable center back. But man, so far, Courtois is doing his thing, and it's not in exactly the same way that Nancy does, even though the formation looks pretty similar on paper.
Yeah, it is the 3-5-2 or 3-4-2-1, whichever you want to term it, because that front three tends to be very flexible. They are not building from the back and possession at all costs in the way that Nancy's teams have been, and that's fine. Because this is, what, a six-game road trip from Montreal to start the season?
Mm-hmm. Same as last year. They got five losses, and it really buried their season in 2023.
It did. They now have 4 points from two games on the road. They had 8 points from the road all of last year. And I think that that level of pragmatism and collection of points will make it easier to get complete buy-in on the system that we think is going to look much more ball dominant in the weeks to come. Like, once you've shown that you can do the main job, which is to collect points, from ownership on down, and as we know with Montreal, ownership is always the key variable, and it can be very variable. Like, you get that buy-in, and then you get to institute the system. And I think it makes sense, even though I'm a little disappointed because they haven't been as much fun to watch as I had hoped in the first 2 weeks. It makes sense from a coaching point of view in wanting to make sure that you get the leeway you need to institute the entire project.
I was a part of the pregame chat with Laurent this week because I'm so fascinated by what he's trying to do or will do in Montreal. What I would say about that lack of the reason why it's not matchy-matchy, I think, is strictly pragmatism to start and also periodization. Like, you can't put yourself in a hole if you're Montreal.
Yep.
So the thing that Courtois is focused on right now is not just possession, though they do have long stretches of sort of ball on the ground possession that resembles some of the things that we see from the Crew. It's limiting space for his opponents. It's like, hey, look, if we lose the ball, yeah, we're going to have a press moment. We're going to counter press, but it's not going to be, hey, go until you get it. Like, if you watch in those moments of potential transition, keep your eye on Sam Piette. His read, to go back to what we were talking about with Yamane and the Galaxy midfield, his ability to read plays and understand, yo, this is a recovery moment. Like, let's get deep. Let's restrict space in behind. Let's make teams break us down in a low block, is very on point. Like, there's a reason why he's the captain. He speaks 3-4 different languages, is able to communicate throughout the squad, but also just has this innate ability to understand, hey, within this system, this is what the game needs. Like, I need to be the guy demanding that we get back into shape, recovering, sometimes being the defender, dropping into those channels to prevent some of these transition moments from being dangerous. So I think right now what Courtois is doing is saying some of the other stuff will come. Let's start with the basics, which is, well, let's not beat ourselves on the road to start the season. Let's not give away space for other teams to exploit in behind us. If we lose the ball, get there. When we're in attack, our wingbacks are going to get forward. Juan was a menace in this game. He fits this system they want to play to a T. He's basically a winger. He's almost a forward. There are times in this game where he's leading the entire attack with the ball. Both of their goals come from driving runs down the right side from Juan. And on the left, Ari Lassiter is adapting to a new position. I think he has the potential to be a similar sort of player. But what Laurent said is, it's not about how close we are to our final version in his mind right now. It's how far away they are. So to me, there's still a lot of progress that he has to make and has to sort of get ingrained in the squad, because we know that the style of play that Wilfred had in Columbus and in Montreal, by the way, doesn't immediately come. You're going to deal with some bumps in the road. You're going to deal with some moments where what you want to do doesn't work and you're punished for it, but you can't walk away from that principle. So building the belief is important. And I think this squad is looking at it like breath of fresh air. Like, oh my gosh, last year under Losada was not the way we were accustomed to playing, at least the guys that were still around from the Nancy year the year before. Like, so this is back to the way they would like to be. And I'm curious to see over the course of the next few weeks, and certainly once Montreal gets home, how Courtois transitions sort of the way he thinks about possession, where they want to have it, and counter press versus recovering back into a low block. So health is still an issue. Joaquin Sosa will come back, and that'll add incredible depth that they already have to the center back position. Those midfielders will get a little bit more chemistry together. And I still look at the front two behind Kokoro or Joseph or whoever it is and just think chemistry's not there yet. I thought Duke and Yonkoff were a little too overlap in what they wanted to do. And then Opoku starts this match and is injured 12 minutes in. And that was a huge bummer not to see Kwadwo Opoku have an opportunity to get a long run. For Dallas, Petar Musa starts, gets his first goal off of, again, to talk about wingbacks and a right wingback getting forward, Bernie Kamungo playing right wingback for FC Dallas. He was advanced up the field a lot. It actually looks to me like this is a more snug fit for what he is and what he wants to do when he's sort of at his best right now in his career, which is riding the line, being a threat in behind, and then being the guy who doesn't have to create the play, but the guy who finishes it, whether it's with the cutback across the box or the finish himself. So FC Dallas got to be disappointed by this result, but they got Jesus Ferreira back on the field. Musa got his first goal and a little bit of a down game from Dante Sealy, but they'll move on to the next one. How about Sandro Schwartz and the Red Bulls, Doyle? Are you a believer?
I am leaning towards that. Yeah. I had them in tier two heading into the season for as an elite contender. And that felt a little bit hopeful, but it was based upon Emil Forsberg being a perfect fit and the type of attacker who could elevate the guys around him and turn all those chances that the Red Bulls have generated into goals. And he hasn't even gotten on the board yet this year. And you could see the effect, you know, especially on the first goal, Elias Manuel, like that comes off of Forsberg reading the play early, making a simple pass, and then Manuel's able to eventually head home Dante Venzier's cross on the back post. Like it works at a very high level already. The Red Bulls are still shopping for a number nine. I think it'll probably be a young DP number nine. They traded for a international roster slot a couple weeks ago. I'm not sure that that is imminent, but it is something that they are working on. The real difference maker, though, has been Noah Eile, the Swedish 21-year-old U22 signing center back. And he looks like a Red Bull center back in that he's
huge,
6'5", and he's maybe not the fleetest of foot in the open field, which in the Red Bull system, like you can live with that if you make quick reads. He does make quick reads. What separates him and has, especially in this game, elevated my expectations for the Red Bull is his ability on the ball. He's maybe not Robin Jansen level in terms of his distribution, but he's not far off. And there was like immediately after the Red Bulls go 1-0 down in this game, the kickoff, and usually on the kickoff, the Red Bulls just boot the ball long and try to turn it into a game of 50-50 second balls and try to score off of that. They instead settled into like a 30 pass sequence where Ella was the one running it as their 4-2-2-2 sort of shifted in a 3-2-2-3 in possession, which is sort of default for a lot of the possession teams we talk about in the world, but not something the Red Bulls ever do because they don't care about possession. Well, they care about possession now because Ayala is so good at spreading the field, and you could see him methodically pinging the ball side to side and pressing Houston back and flatter and flatter and flatter in that 4-4-2 until he opened a gap right up the middle, and he plays a line-breaking pass right up the middle, 40 yards onto Manuel's foot, and Manuel one touches it into Forsberg in wide open space in the box. And it, I think it was Mikhail or maybe Sviatchenko who came in at the last minute to deflect the shot. But it was the most methodical and incisive series of possession play that I have seen from the Red Bulls in a half decade or more. And it all, I'm going to say all, but like most of it came from this 21-year-old center back that nobody had heard of 3 months ago. Put a drink in me, I might argue that he has been the best newcomer in the league this year. Like this kid through two games, he looks incredible. And if the Red Bulls have a higher level, and I'm buying into Sandro Schwartz, a lot of it is because of Isla. But I do still think they need to go out and get that number nine.
I believe it's Noah Ayla. I just listened to him say his name. I was like debating that entire time. And I was like, okay, I think we got to get this one right. But I'm with you on him. He was an unknown. I mean, this comes from Scouting Network as well. You know, yep. We talk about teams and the strengths that they have. Red Bulls have a deep scouting network. They have a worldwide web that they can look to and find the right kind of players. They understand what the profile looks like. This looks like a pretty big hit so far for them. You mentioned young DP. I believe I read something in your column about Houston Dynamo getting a young DP, and they probably need one. Well done. The goal on this one goes to Ibrahim Aliyu. It's a 2-1 loss for Houston at home. Another great ball by Coco, but that's two games down at home for Houston, where they were juggernauts last year, and only 1 point. That's really got to rankle Ben Olsen, and they need players. Is a young DP coming?
From what I have heard, a young DP attacker and one other signing are on the way for the Dynamo. So you can take credit for that, Weeby, because on this show last week, you led the charge saying that Dynamo need to make more signings and we have to get behind them, and Ben Olsen's call for more signings. We have to get behind Ben Olsen until he gets some pieces. Well, it looks like some pieces are coming.
You can't let beautiful things die in darkness, Doyle. Yeah. The Dynamo are a beautiful thing in Major League Soccer, and probably unexpectedly so. We cannot allow this to happen. By the way, in a similar vein, our extra time man of the match day, don't think we forgot about this very new bit that I just made up, has to be Lewis Morgan. Has to be. Congratulations to all the Brooklynites in the cafes this morning talking about Manuel, but Lewis Morgan is back for the first time in a year. He scores a goal, had a hip injury, I believe, that just absolutely ruined his entire 2023 season.
He looked very good, and I was glad to see it because I had heard earlier in the preseason, like, oh, he might not ever be fit again. And then I heard just before the season started, like, oh, no, buy some Lewis Morgan stock. He's coming back hot. So I'm happy it's the second one. Is man of the match day the best player or the best story for the match day?
Good question. I think it's the best story. I think it's just the, you know, we're just saying, hey, this guy deserves some love. He might not be the guy that wins the voted on, hey, best Messi, Suarez this week, whatever it is, Benteke last week. It was Eric Williamson in match day one or two, or I'm losing track, and now it's Lewis Morgan. So it might be the extra time comeback man of the match day. Yeah, I don't know. All right, let's keep it moving. That's whack. New York City. Santi Rodriguez yelling at his coaching staff. Another poor performance in St. Louis. City just killed him in transition. Nick Cushing's got to be under pressure. I don't know that we got to dig too much deeper into New York. We kind of detailed this last time around, but this was the St. Louis that Bradley Carnell wants to see. Doyle.
Yeah, I thought they were more aggressive. I think that anytime you get Sam Adeniran out on the break with the ball on his left foot, it feels like it's a goal. So that's a pretty good plan for them.
I feel like he feels that way. Like that is a nothing angle. That's a cutback every time. And I think the goalkeeper is leaning and he's just like, no, but I got a sledgehammer here and I see some concrete. I think I'm just going to mash this.
Yeah, very high X wallop on that shot. They were fun to watch and it was a necessary bounce back after they've been flat and disappointing last week against both Houston in CONCACAF Champions Cup and RSL at home. But it's also, given the way that NYCFC have looked, that's a game that you should win. If you're a playoff team, you should win that game. And so credit to St. Louis for doing that. But boy, NYCFC are a poor soccer team at the moment.
File under the same sort of idea. If you are a good soccer team or a shield contender or one of the favorites in the West, looking at you, Seattle Sounders, you should beat a Drusilis Austin who take two shots at home. You should. You should do it. And I know Raul Ruidíaz hit the crossbar and the late moments, but not enough true cutting edge moments, like big chances for Seattle. That's got to be a concern for Brian Schmetzer, and that is whack. I had a lot of faith in the Sounders team, and some of their issues from last year are cropping up yet again. All right, let's end with a little preview of the CONCACAF Champions League this week. It is an absolutely loaded slate. Round of 16, about as good as it gets. Philadelphia, Pachuco, Orlando Tigres on Tuesday. On Wednesday, New England, Alajuelense, and then Houston, Columbus. Houston, Columbus is going to be really interesting as far as that clash of styles. Cincy, Monterrey, and Nashville, Miami. That's just the MLS side of the bracket. You've got Guadalajara, America as well. So it's going to be really fun this week. Make sure you're getting some sleep because you may have to stay up a tad late. Thank God for the 9 p.m. starts on the late end. What's your favorite match? What's the one you're watching closest?
Orlando Tigres, because it's a rematch. Because even though Orlando got absolutely thumped this week, I still have high expectations for them. And maybe that'll serve them well. Maybe coming off of an embarrassing performance, they'll play with some of the fire in their eyes that was missing this past weekend. And Tigres, like, I'm a romantic, man. Tigres, they've kept this group around for a long time, and they have won so many things, including CCL. And I like to watch dynasties who are getting their last chance to climb the mountain. And that's what I think that's what it is for Tigres. I think most of these guys probably are not going to be back for them next year. So it's like the last ride of the best group that we've seen maybe in CONCACAF history. So that is, to me, clear favorites.
If you're talking about best games, it might be America Chivas. I mean, you just don't get much bigger than that Clásico. Cincy Monterrey, I've got my eyes all over that. Brandon Vasquez, as we mentioned, just continues to bang in the goals. Really nice finish. Patience in the box for him against Pumas. Sorry, Maria, on the weekend. So he comes in very, very good form for Monterrey. But I'm going to go with, I think, Philadelphia Pachuca. Pachuca was one of those teams that most people didn't expect much out of this year. And they're third at the table in Mexico. Eric Sanchez is balling. Salman Rondon is scoring goals, 6 goals so far for him, and they're young. So we'll see if they can keep up that level. And you talk about a dynasty that's trying to add more. Well, Philadelphia are the team that have been on the brink of getting the crown and have never got it. So this is their chance to try to go get that crown finally, but they got to get past Pachuca to do so. Apparently, Andre Blake is going to be back for this one. Julian Carranza is a question mark.
Hey, wait, he says he's
back with the group.
Exactly. And that leaves it enough leeway for me to wonder if Andre Blake is actually going to be back.
I think that's fair. I'm hoping. I'm standing the side of positivity in this case. By the way, if you're sitting here wondering why we're not talking Sporting Kansas City, Philadelphia, terrible, terrible end of that game for Sporting Kansas City, and as well as for the referees. Go to Instant Replay on Apple TV as well as YouTube. We talk about that play and many, many more from the weekend. So if you want more details and more analysis there, I've got you on Instant Replay. Anything left? Anything we missed? Anything you want to put a bow on? Any of my parenting techniques that you think are...
No, I think we did a good job of covering that at the start of the show. I don't know if that'll be a new segment, but it felt urgent this week with, again, the way you threw your children under the bus for your own inability to keep track of your own tactical notebook.
That's just remember that they never feel that sort of frustration from me. It's all hugs, kisses, puppy dogs, and playing soccer games in the basement. All right, everybody, that's our match day 3 review. If we missed anything, if you have any takes that you want to add, hit us up. We'll include them in the show later on this week. Enjoy your week, everybody. Enjoy CONCACAF Champions Cup. We'll see you on Thursday. Adios. We'll be right back.